Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. This Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. Aaron, the Oregon Ducks are the story of the weekend for us, I think, in college baseball. There's lots of college baseball to catch up on. We're going to sprinkle in some 2012 draft talk as well. But in our top 25, it was a fairly static top 25 rankings. We did bring in a couple of different teams at the back, Mississippi State, TCU, Oregon State. We'll talk about them. But there was some shuffling in the top 10. But the team that we've probably spent the most time discussing was the Oregon Ducks, Aaron. And I think we thought that Oregon had the best week of any team. We only moved them up one spot. We didn't really have, just the way that the kind of the mechanics of the rest of the rankings went, we didn't really have a great way to move the Ducks up. But it wasn't for lack of trying, and I think when we look at overall resumes, it's hard to deny that Oregon Ducks resume is really about as good as anybody not named Florida State or Baylor.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the fact that they do have two series losses, which is the only fly in the ointment here. They lost the series to Washington and Washington State. But, boy, I mean, does any team have four series as good as going on the road, taking two out of three at Arizona, Stanford, and UCLA, plus sweeping Arizona State at home? I mean, that's just really loud. I mean, they're in first place in a very strong Pac-12. I mean, I don't know that you've got one complete, flaw-free juggernaut in the Pac-12, but you've got five or so, maybe even six, really good teams in that conference. I think it's loud that they went down to Arizona and won that series. I frankly didn't expect it, but this Oregon team has been exceeding my expectations all year long. I mean, you look at this team on paper, and it just doesn't excite you that much, and it's kind of like Fullerton. You look at them and you think, okay, they're winning. It's really impressive what they've done. Both those teams, their resumes are extremely impressive. But you look at them and you think, well, there's no big arms on this staff. I mean, that was Cadell's had an amazing year, but he's a senior who's kind of mid to high 80s guy. I mean, he's just a pitchability guy, pitchability right-hander, and that's what most of their guys are. And yet their pitching staff has dominated. It's had an incredibly good year, even after the injuries that they suffered. I mean, George Horton has done an amazing job handling that pitching staff. He's really, now that, since Andrew Cech has left for UC Santa Barbara, George took over the handling of that staff on his own, and he's done a fantastic job. He's got a lot out of those guys, and the offense is improved. I mean, they're hitting whatever they're hitting, 260, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't blow you away, but doggone it, they win, and there's so much to be said for that. I mean, I still think this is a team that, the resume impresses you more than the team itself. I mean, ultimately, if I'm stacking up Oregon and Florida, I like Oregon's body of work just as much, maybe more than Florida's, but I do think Florida has a much higher ceiling.
I think that's a fair assessment, and the amazing thing to me, I go by a lot of the reporting that you do, and then, I look at a lot of the numbers, and I, kind of have my own feel for some of these things. But the thing that just jumps out to me about Oregon, besides their resume, I think, like you put it, those four series wins are really loud. But the opponent's slugging percentage of .299, I mean, there's really nothing that they're doing that's on paper that's exceptional. They are fielding very well. .978 fielding percentage is really, really good. They're aggressive on the base pass. They're not necessarily – you hear that. I talked to a couple coaches on the West Coast this week, and you hear that Oregon's really aggressive on the base pass, and they really force the issue and they push it, and they do a lot of those things that George Horton coach teams do. That Aaron Payne takes a dose as much as anybody. But it seems like the separating factor is that they just don't – they're a little bit more prone to have big innings offensively than their opponents are. And the big reason for that is even though they don't have great power, they get the big extra base hit more often than their opponents. And their opponents slugging .299, it's just hard to win that way. To beat Oregon, to score a lot of runs off them, you either need Oregon to self-destruct a little bit. And again, .978 fielding percentage, they just aren't giving you a lot of extra outs. and you're just going to string a lot of singles together off that team. If you're slugging 299, just not a lot of extra base hits. You're going to have to keep on getting singles and single and another single. You're going to have to execute offensively at a pretty high rate to score off these guys. And, they just seem like they've been a lot more efficient offensively and defensively than their opponents. And it's nothing flashy.
Yeah.
That really kind of goes back to just good, solid baseball players who are being really well coached. And it's amazing, again, I mean, I think we've talked about their program over the last few years and been impressed. That 14-42 start, regionals the next year. And did they win a regional that second year, or did they just or they went to UConn?
That's right. They went to UConn, and Florida State won that regional.
That's it. Then last year, they had a disastrous start. They really finished very strong. I know talking to Coach Horton in Omaha when he was there doing some things for Nike, he really thought that if the season had been one more week, that Oregon could have kept going. I believe they swept Oregon State late last year. They didn't sweep when they won the series. They really finished strong. If college baseball had an NIT, they would have been a strong NIT team. But they've maintained that momentum really from last year. And like you said, their resume is just so good, Aaron. And it's not just in the conference. I mean, that the series win at Hawaii to start the year looks good. The series sweep at Vanderbilt doesn't look great, but I mean, it is a road sweep at an SEC team.
And it's looking better now because Vanderbilt they're not a juggernaut like we thought they'd be coming into the year, but they've gotten better. They're almost back to 500. So that series does look better for Oregon as the season goes on.
Right. It's just an impressive. There's just very few flaws in the resume for the Oregon Ducks, as we discuss it here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Aaron, the rest of the Pac-10, outside of Oregon having beaten those other teams, we've really struggled with ranking those other Pac-12 teams. I keep catching myself, but this week again we kind of shuffled up UCLA, Arizona, Stanford. The Cardinal is a team that kind of took the tumble this weekend. They lose a series at Oregon State. The Beavs back in the rankings at number 23. You know, Stanford down to number 17, Aaron. It's just very surprising to see Stanford, especially after that really loud start and with all their talent, to be 11-10 in the league. I'm not sure they're the most disappointing team in the country. We obviously just talked about Vanderbilt. But, boy, Stanford just kind of the pitching especially just leaves you wanting.
That's exactly what it comes down to. And, you know, offensively, they are dangerous and they are explosive. They're capable of exploding.
They're quite good,
but
they're not great, though.
Right. I mean, it's not coming into the year, and after the first month, we thought, wow, this could be this should be the best offense in the country, and it's not. It's not. It hasn't been over the last 5 weeks. They seem like they got the offense going the previous 2 weekends against Arizona State and UCLA, and then this weekend they kind of fell on their faces again. And you know, they scored 6 runs combined in those 2 losses against Oregon State. And the offense is good, but it's not good enough, I think, to carry a pitching staff that's just mediocre. I mean, I still think Stanford is a good team. I think they're an Omaha contender because I like their personnel, and I think if they can get hot and they can ride one of those streaks, then they're really dangerous. But they're streaky. I mean, that's what it seems like. And right now they're still trying to figure out roles in the pitching staff. We talked about this with Arkansas a couple of weeks ago, where Arkansas was trying to find its identity on the mound a little bit. I mean, Stanford after Mark Appel, you know, Mooney Ham had a pretty good first half. Hasn't been as good, and he was scratched this weekend with the flu. But you know, last week against UCLA, his control was really poor. He was all over the place, just a scattershot kind of control. And he's not really what you would think of as a steady, reliable number two guy. I mean, he's got a much bigger arm than a Jake Reed or even an Alex Cadell at Oregon. But I promise you, Cardinal wish they had Alex Cadell right now. Because you know what you're going to get from that guy, and Mooney Ham isn't the same guy. And after that, they've had Venegas in all variety of different roles. This weekend they had Sahil Bloom making, I think, his first start, certainly in a long time, if he hadn't really started before at all. But we're in week 12, and they're still trying to find their way on the mound, and that's not a great sign.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you're looking at Mooney Ham, the guy's got 44 walks/hit by pitches. 44 times where the opposing team has gotten on base without having to hit the ball because he doesn't throw the ball where he wants it to go. And Sahil Bloom, you know, it's just amazing to me. I know I commented on this earlier in a podcast, but you have the two guys on the team who've thrown the most innings, Appel and Mooneyham, who both are averaging a strikeout per inning, if not better in Mooneyham's case. And yet the rest of this team is just such a low – there's just no power arms on the rest of the team outside of Venegas. At least no power arms who get any strikeouts. Even Venegas, they don't strike anybody out. And they're not a great defensive team, Aaron. Now they've moved Piscotty to left field. Obviously without Coppola, they're not as good defensively in the middle infield. I know that Dorn has been a nice player for them at second base, although he's slumped since that nice hot start. It is not as good in the middle infield. Their outfield defense is just okay. It really seems like Stanford was going great early. They had Major Hochstadter going well for them on the weekend, John Hochstadter. But then you had the Jake Stewart injury that really kind of seemed like it threw their offense a little off because Jake Stewart was also a good start. He hasn't been the same since. And the Coppola injury, everybody's got injuries, and Stanford has depth. I mean, they just rolled Alex Blandino right in there, and he's a nice player. But they haven't been the same. Excuse me, I'm going to edit that out. They haven't been the same offensively since Jake Stewart's injury, and their pitching, like you said, they just haven't found their identity. And I think, and the problem is, I think they kind of almost do know what their identity is, and it's just not good enough. You know, their identity is two guys who throw hard and can strike you out, and a bunch of other guys who are just like, here you go. And they're just not good enough defensively. If they had Oregon's defense and their defensive efficiency, this pitching staff would work. But it just doesn't. They don't strike anybody out, and they're basically going to have to get lucky in the postseason that people hit the ball at, that, you know, the opponents hit the ball at people. And right now I'm not too impressed. Now they have had the toughest part of their schedule. They've got Wazoo at home, at Utah, home to Cal. Those are three very winnable series for the Cardinal. But they just seem like they're out of the completely out of the national top eight national seed at this point.
Probably so at this point. I mean, I guess if they really got hot and they won the rest of their games, I mean, you know, their RPI will be okay. I mean, it's still around, 10 to 15 range somewhere.
Right.
You know, I mean, they do have that strong non-conference schedule that kind of buoys them. Although, as we talked about, I mean, Texas wound up not being a vintage Texas team, and Vanderbilt wasn't as good as we thought they'd be. And Fresno hasn't had a great year. So, I mean, even the first month of the season, it doesn't hold up as well as it looked at the time. But I'll tell you, trying to figure out the Pac-12 is very tricky because it's just you've got all these teams bunched together. And, you know, if you try to look at the head-to-head matchups, you'll drive yourself crazy because, you know, Stanford last week went down to UCLA and won a series. UCLA won a series at Arizona. Arizona swept Stanford.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's Oregon beat all those teams but lost to Washington State. I mean, so it's a very competitive league. And, at the end, I don't think there is one team in this league that is a real standout, balanced, complete team in every facet. And I think they all have flaws, but they're all dangerous. You know, I can see any one of these teams getting hot and making a deep postseason run. You can throw Oregon State in that mix too. But right now, again, I mean, I just think that it's hard to figure it out. It's a fascinating league. I'm very intrigued by this race.
Yeah, and kind of a wild card kind of line in the weeds there is Arizona State, which still feels like haven't really gotten going offensively. But all they have to play for is the regular season. They're obviously not eligible for the postseason. Just feels like, you know, they're just two games back. Feels like Arizona State just – it would shock me, I guess, if they had a closing run in them, you know, and kind of won the division won the regular season. They still have Washington at home and then have four games left with Arizona, three of which are conference games. I don't know. Do you think Arizona State could make a run, or are there just too many teams between them and winning this thing?
No, you're right. They could make a run. I mean, they're only two games right now behind Oregon. The problem is that Oregon, I think, has really gotten through the meat of its schedule already as well. I mean, they've got USC left in conference at home, and then they're at Oregon State, you know, which is never an easy series. I'm sure it'll be a wild series this year, but that's it. You know, so I don't know that there's enough margin there for Arizona State to make up two games, but it's possible. It could happen.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. the other Pac-10 team, Arizona, seems like Arizona, that was a little bit of a surprising weekend result. And then, of course, the series that you went to, which was Purdue and UCLA. So let's talk about that one a little bit. Pretty exciting series in that we had a couple of close games, then kind of a bullpen meltdown by the Bruins that allowed Purdue to escape being swept. They were three outs away from being swept, competitively swept, but how big is that one win for Purdue? It feels like from here, Aaron, that was a pretty big victory because they really saved a decent amount of face by going in there and winning a game. They kind of did what you expect them to do. When you're a Big Ten team, even a good Big Ten team, goes on the road at a Pac-12 team, you kind of expect the Pac-12 team to win that series. And UCLA did, but I felt like Purdue made a nice statement by going out there being competitive and stealing a game. Did you feel like Purdue... What was your takeaway from that series?
I think you nailed it. I think Purdue did what it was supposed to do. It went there and didn't get swept, and it almost did. But you know, certainly the game on Sunday had a little bit of a fluky feel to it. You're down 5 runs in the 9th inning, and you score 10 against the UCLA bullpen that has been, as Savage put it on Saturday, has been really their strength this year. I mean, those guys have been good, and they just melted down. It was bizarre. I mean, you know, Scott Griggs on Saturday looked great, struck out the side, you know, he's locating okay with the fastball and the curveball, and then the next day he comes back and he walks 4 straight guys, and Purdue's off and running, you know, and one of those head-scratchers. And then Grant Watson, who's been so good for UCLA, got knocked around after Griggs left the game. So, you know, feels like I said, it feels just a little bit fluky, but at the same time, Purdue's an experienced older team that can work some counts and can and battle. I mean, they're not going to quit on you. So, you know, I did get the sense watching the doubleheader on Saturday that these two teams, they're pretty similar. I mean, as I thought coming into the year, and Doug Shriver said it afterwards too, he felt like his team and UCLA's team were pretty similar. I mean, they're both older teams, a lot of veterans in the lineup, good offensive clubs, pretty good defensive clubs, strike throwers in the rotation, not big arms. Neither of those teams have big arms in the rotation, but they have strike throwers. They're quality guys, and then decent bullpens. And on Saturday, UCLA got the timely hits. You know, the second game they were out hit 10-4, they still won. So you know, that's a game that could have gone either way. So I certainly feel like Purdue wasn't outclassed out there. I mean, I think they were very similar to the Bruins, and you put them on a neutral field, it could go either way.
Aaron, in your mind, I mean, who's the top draft between those two clubs for this year? Is it Griggs, even though he melted down the other day? Is it Jeff? I always pronounce it Jelilich. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
It is Jelilich, yeah.
Jelilich. Is it Cameron Perkins or Kevin Plawecki, one of those middle-of-the-lineup jokers at Purdue? Somebody I haven't mentioned. In your mind, who's the top draft prospect on those two clubs?
It's probably either Plawecki or Jelilich. I think we have both of those two guys, if I'm not mistaken, as maybe second round kind of guys for this draft. And I could see Jelilich as kind of a second or a third rounder. I think we had Plawecki in that same range somewhere. So I those two guys are close. I mean, for me, if Plawecki can catch and he's got a chance to, then you probably give him the edge. I mean, he's a physical, strong right-handed hitter with some pop in there, and it's not a standout arm or standout receiving, but it's adequate, I think. And for Jelilich, he's going to be a corner guy at the next level. He's got a I think he hits with authority. I mean, I've seen him hit some balls really hard and far, but he's more of a line drive hitter. He is a plus runner right now, but he's not a center fielder. He's definitely a corner guy with kind of an average arm, so you know the profile is a little tricky. And I think maybe he could be, not quite Trot Nixon, but in that mold a little bit if he can, mature and grow into that power a little more. Because I think the power's in there, I think he'd be that kind of a player. So I think both those guys are probably second, maybe third rounders.
That's how it feels like. I think that's a good assessment of it. How good? I mean, I'm not saying from a draft prospect, but how good is this Blake Mascarello guy? Because it just seems like this guy, he's got pretty loud numbers out of the Purdue bullpen. I mean, he leads their team in wins and an ERA, so that's pretty good. He's given up 4 extra base hits all year, and he was really good again in an extended period. It seems like it's a pretty nice asset for Purdue to have in their bullpen, to have a senior left-hander like that who can be a short guy, but obviously they don't need him to be the short guy because they have Whitgren, but they feel like a team between Breedlove and Haas. They have these two nice starters. They kind of need a third starter. And they have two guys you know they trust in the bullpen, and Whitgren and Mascarello. They feel like a team, Aaron, that's built very well to be successful in regionals.
I agree with you. I do. And you know, Joe Hayes and Lance Breedlove are both, again, they're pitchability guys. They're kind of like those Oregon guys, you know, mid-80s, maybe touch high 80s, you know, mix and match, good deception. I mean, nice three or four pitch mixes. And then Mascarello at the back is again, he's kind of similar velocity-wise. He's a, kind of a tall left-hander, lower slot guy. Got some deception in there. He can mix in a kind of a slower, slurvy breaking ball and change up. And, you know, he's pretty effective against lefties and righties, it seemed to me. And he pitched very well for four shutout innings on Saturday. So certainly a nice piece. And you're right. I mean, I think you only need, you know, you need five or six guys. Theoretically, you can win a regional and a super regional with five or six guys. And I like Purdue's number three starter. He didn't have a great week this week, but Connor Podkol, his freshman, probably got the best arm on their staff. You know, an 89 to 92 guy, and he's got a bright future, and he's pitched pretty well for them in general over the last 5 or 6 weeks here. So, you know, they've got a pretty good core group of pitchers, I think, that they trust.
We're talking about college baseball here on the Baseball America podcast today with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. Before we dive into the Southeastern Conference, I want to remind you that the Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC win every practice. I have a feeling like I don't pronounce Vanderbilt properly when I do that read most often. I think I just speed through it a little bit too much. But let's go to, speaking of Vanderbilt, let's go to the SEC, Aaron. And lo and behold, you know, 2-3 weeks left in the season, and here are the Gamecocks in first place again. And only two more regular season series left. And Ray Tanner has this young Gamecocks team that stumbled and wobbled early when they got swept at Kentucky. They have two series losses at Kentucky, home to Florida. They've won every series since then, Aaron. They're at Georgia next weekend after winning 2 out of 3 at Arkansas last weekend and this past weekend. And looming in the distance is this end of the regular season showdown with LSU, which is the other team at 16-8 in the SEC. They're tied for first in the league. How delicious would that be 2 weeks from now to have South Carolina, LSU, 8,000 fans plus at Carolina Stadium, SEC regular season title on the line?
That's delicious. That's a good word for it. It's a tantalizing matchup. You know, South Carolina, going to Arkansas and winning 2 out of 3, to me, is awfully impressive. It's not an easy place to play. Fans were really into it, and they had to rally back from 6 runs down in the first game. You know, this South Carolina team is playing with that swagger again, it seems to me. You know, they believe in themselves. The offense has really come around. They're scoring runs. You know, it's not, I think, maybe the dominant pitching staff that we thought it would be, but it's, you know, they've got a lot of guys that they trust, certainly. And I mean, I don't know. I just think They've got the South Carolina mojo back, you know, and the series sweep at Kentucky seems like ages ago, doesn't it?
It really does, Aaron. And you know, I actually was talking with the esteemed columnist of the state, Ron Morris, during the week. I haven't seen if Ron wrote the column or not, but he posited that this is the most talented South Carolina team ever. He didn't say it was the best, but the most talented. Especially on the mound. And I had a hard time refuting that. In terms of talent, this might be their most talented physical team. They're starting to get Adam Matthews going a little bit. We've talked about how much we like their freshmen, guys like English, Pancake, now Grayson Griner really starting to come on, had a big couple of hits in that comeback on Thursday or Friday, the opener of that series. Is this the most talented Gamecocks team you've seen? You know, put them in perspective of some of their past teams, just in terms of talent.
I don't know. I still kind of like the Smoke Havens Darnell teams that never went to Omaha.
That's a great take.
As far as pure talent goes, I mean, but This is a better team. There's no question this is a better team than those teams, you know, and that's been South Carolina. I mean, even last year, I mean, you have Jackie Bradley Jr. as a supplemental first-round guy on this team, and, you know, that kind of elevates the talent level as well. I mean, there's probably some of these freshmen are probably going to be pretty good picks in a few years, but I don't know.
Like on the mound,
I think this team's more talented than last.
It sounds like the big separator is just the mound depth, because they've just got – maybe they don't have 14 guys throwing 90 like Mississippi State, but they've just got so many options, Aaron. Their bullpen is so deep, and now they're starting to get Forrest Kumas going a little bit. Just so they have an embarrassment of riches down there in their bullpen, where even though they don't have the one dominant guy like they had last year with Roth with an ERA at 1, he's at 282 this year. So he's been human. And Matt Price has been kind of human as well. I wouldn't bet against Matt Price in the postseason. I wouldn't bet against Michael Roth. And they have lots of other options and answers in their pitching staff. Like you said, it's not dominant. Boy, they've got way more than six guys.
Yeah, that's a great point. In that respect, it's much different than last year when it was really, like we've talked about, it was Taylor and Price really in the bullpen. I mean, those were the guys that they went to and the guys that they really trusted. And this year it does feel like they've got a lot more options, I agree. And they can really mix and match. They've got a lot of guys from the right side and the left side. It's a good bullpen, you know. And I think you can stack it right up there with any bullpen out there. I mean, I still like Rice's bullpen a lot, but South Carolina's got a lot more options from the left side than Rice does. So if I had to pick one, maybe I'd take the Gamecocks.
Aaron, I agree with you. I think that South Carolina has a lot of options. They look very dangerous for the postseason again. LSU looking awfully dangerous for the postseason, Aaron. And just I don't know if there's separation, but those four at top SEC teams, LSU, South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, the resumes are all pretty close to each other. But it feels like LSU kind of has been the more consistent team, at least in the league. It feels like in the league they have the best resume. And that series against App State, the better Appalachian State has played, the better that looks. Really, LSU kind of has the one hiccup, it feels like, at Kentucky and then early at Auburn. But otherwise, they've been they've taken on all comers. I mean, if you had to give an edge in terms of resume, LSU or South Carolina, who do you like there?
I guess I like LSU. I do think they've won more series against teams that are really good. I mean, you talk about sweeping Arkansas, going two Gainesville, winning two out of three. Two out of three at Ole Miss, I think, is pretty loud. It's not an easy thing to do. But I mean, you know, then again, South Carolina finally got themselves, I think, a marquee series win this weekend, going to Arkansas and winning two out of three. I mean, I know Arkansas is ranked number 20 right now. They're not four like they were in the preseason, but I still like that series a lot. I mean, I don't know. These two resumes are pretty similar. Honestly, I think Kentucky is the team that is – that stands out more than either of them as far as quality series wins. I mean, Kentucky, they took two out of three from LSU. They took two out of three at Arkansas. They took two out of three from Ole Miss. I mean, they swept South Carolina.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Kentucky now has lost two straight series, so their resume is kind of falling back to the pack a little bit. But all these teams, I completely agree. I think it's four teams fighting for three national seeds. And it's hard to separate them because they all have had very good seasons.
I think it's going to be tough, Aaron. I mean, Kentucky's down at 11 in the RPI. I feel like even though I don't think the committee wants to put top eight national seeds from the SEC, it's going to be hard to not do that. If Kentucky beats Alabama and wins a series against Alabama and Mississippi State the last two weekends of the season, their RPI is behind Virginia, but they clearly have a better case than Virginia, a better resume than Virginia. North Carolina and Kentucky, that's a tough one. UCLA versus Kentucky, I know UCLA is the number three RPI, but that's a tough one because UCLA's lost twice as many series as Kentucky. I know they played a tougher schedule.
Right.
It's going to be hard, I think, to keep the SEC from having four top eight national seeds.
I think I still have a feeling it'll wind up being three, but I do think there's four that you can make very compelling cases for, and I agree with you. I mean, I think Kentucky, as the fourth team right now in the SEC, let's say, I think they have a stronger case than North Carolina or even UCLA, despite the RPI. So I think right now if I had to pick 8 national seeds, and I, you know, was not just going to use the RPI as a crutch, I think I would be comfortable with 4 SEC teams in that mix. But I still know that that's going to happen. I have a feeling it'll still wind up being 3.
That's going to be a tough call. That's going to be a really tough call. I don't envy the committee on that one. Just on the rest of the league, real quick, Aaron, Vanderbilt is 47 in the RPI right now. Mississippi State's at 41. Feels like that's a bubble team that should be in. Georgia's at 39. Feels like bubble, but in.
Yes.
But Vanderbilt feels like it's kind of – right now it's out because they're under 500. We're still looking at 8 teams, 9 teams for the SEC. It feels like right now there's only 8, you know, because Auburn's down at 64.
Yeah.
And the RPI doesn't feel like Auburn's going to get in with an RPI down there. What's your, you know, from a stock report standpoint, who do you like as that 9th SEC club?
Well, right now I think you're looking at Vanderbilt. If they can finish above 500, that's your best shot for 9th team. I think we had thought it was Auburn. Auburn's been so up and down. And, you know, last week we had them in after they swept Tennessee. The previous week I think we had them out after they were swept by South Carolina. Previous week we had them in after they, I guess it was 2 weeks before that. I don't know. I mean, it's just, but they've lost now. They were swept at Georgia, swept by South Carolina. They lost 2 out of 3 at Vanderbilt. They were swept at Alabama, I believe. So, I mean, this has been a rough second half. Auburn, I think you can dismiss at this point. So it all comes down to whether Vanderbilt can finish strong, and it's, you know, it's challenging. They're at LSU this weekend, and they got Ole Miss at home.
Right.
If they win those series, they finish above 500, they got a real chance.
I think if they win those two series, they're in for sure. And I think the big development for them yesterday was they finally got some production in the league from our Vanderbilt cheese ball, if you want to call him that, which would be Sam Selman. I mean, we have been all about Sam Selman, you and me, from a draft standpoint for a couple of years. And he finally goes out there. And it's a nice matchup in terms of draft arms in Tennessee. It's a down year in the draft in Tennessee. But after Dalton Saberhagen and Kevin Zomek, you know, TFCO'd their way out of that game by the 4th inning, that's thanks for coming out, an old Will Kimmy parlance here we like to use. But Drew Steckenrider, who's 94-96 when he's at his best, and Sam Selman on the mound kind of deciding that game. And Selman, who pitched 4 1/3 innings all year in Southeastern Conference play, goes 4 2/3 on Sunday, only gives up 1 run, generally through strikes, you know, and gets the win. That's pretty crucial for Vanderbilt, I think, to get another power left-hander into a weekend series like that. That was one of the reasons we had them ranked so high in the preseason, was guys like Zomek, Selman, Beedy, Verhagen, you know, depth of power arms, Kleinert in the bullpen. They're still not there yet, Aaron, but it feels like Vanderbilt's getting closer to what we thought they would be. So just kind of an interesting development there.
Let's look at the math real quickly here. I don't think they're going to win the series at LSU. So
I
let's
agree.
Say that they don't get swept. Let's say they don't get swept, and let's say they take 2 out of 3 against Ole Miss at home. I think that's really your realistic scenario, best case, 3-3 down the stretch.
3-3, yep.
They would then have to, you know, I think they'd have to win the Louisville game midweek. So that would make a 4-3 finish. That put them right at 500. They would then need to win.
They need to go like 3-2 in the SEC tournament, like Georgia did
right.
Last year.
Exactly. And you know what? It's a tall order, and I don't see it happening. So I think we're probably going to have Vanderbilt outside on this week's stock report, but we'll see.
I think you're right. I think they have to me, they have to win both those series, or they have to sweep Ole Miss and not get swept at LSU. That's tough. I think more likely is they win. Their most likely path is they win the Louisville game, which is not easy. Louisville's 22nd in our rankings. They don't get swept at LSU. They manage a game there, and then they're going to have to sweep Ole Miss, and then kind of like I said, go 2-2 or 3-2, you know, in the league tournament. They're going to have to do better than what you would expect them to do, based on what they've been this year. And to me, the only way that happens is Sam Selman, Kevin Zomek, Tyler Beedy, Verhagen. These guys pitched the way we thought they could pitch coming into the year. But I agree with you. It's a tall order. I don't have great confidence in them achieving that tall order. Real quick, Aaron, to the ACC. We've talked a little bit about Clemson. we finally have a little delineation in the ACC right now. Florida State has separated themselves from the pack for a long time. Speaking of the pack, NC State's won 9 straight games. It hasn't been against the greatest competition, but it's like Charlotte, Duke, Cal State, Bakersfield this weekend. But 9 straight wins is 9 straight wins. North Carolina gets Colin Moran back. They sweep Boston College. You know, Virginia's won 7 straight games. There's your top 5 in the ACC with Clemson. Is that 5th team, I guess? Miami and Florida, 6. So there's 6 regional teams. 7, 8 regional teams from this league. I mean, Maryland seems like it's played its way out. Where do you think the ACC stands?
This is one of the tough ones because you've got a bunch of teams after that first group of 6 in the mix, and Maryland has played its way out. You can stick a fork in them, despite they had a bunch of wins against top 25. They're propping them up, but they're 8-18 in the league now. Forget it.
Maybe they win the finale of the Florida State series tonight, and then they'd have to sweep Virginia. If they can win their last 4 games at 12-18, it just still feels like that's just not enough.
Yeah, it would be tight. I mean, I don't think so. It's possible, I suppose. There's teams that have gotten in with that kind of conference record before. I mean, 9-17 in the Big 12 comes to mind. Oklahoma State, but
that's never going to go away.
So it's possible.
Yeah, no, it's possible. It's highly improbable. It's much less probable than Vanderbilt, where Eric Backett used to work.
Yeah, you're right. I think Virginia Tech is still kind of hanging around in the mix, and Georgia Tech I still think will wind up finding its way in. But you know, those two teams are both 10-14 in the league right now. I think they're tied for the last 2 spots in the conference tournament. A game ahead of Wake Forest. So you know how these teams finish. I mean, I think. If you miss the ACC tournament, I don't see you getting in this year. I mean, it's I suppose it's possible. I mean, there have been some times in Stock Report where I've had to put 9 ACC teams in. Didn't feel great about it, but it was just hard to get to 64. I don't know. I mean, I think you really need to be in the conference tournament. I think Wake has stumbled now, and they were swept at Boston College last weekend. That was a killer. That was just a really tough loss. For Wake Forest, that might have dealt their hopes a crippling blow. So if Virginia Tech can finish strong now, I mean, they've got NC State at home and they're at UNC. Go 3-3 in those games, they're probably in 13-17.
Feels like if anything's going to deal your hopes a crippling blow, it would be a series sweep at BC. This is not your Tony Sanchez, Mike Belfiore BC team. It's a scrappy bunch, but not an overly talented bunch. Aaron, last part of the podcast, let's just talk about some of these teams that came in into the rankings this weekend. Louisville's been there, but I don't feel like we've talked much about the Big East, with good reason. It just hasn't been a great Big East year. But St. John's still leading the league, defensively challenged UConn, sitting there tied with Louisville. We got a chance to get 2 Big East teams this year. The St. John's, where are they in the picture for if they don't win the Big East?
They've got a chance. I mean, it's they're 59 now in the RPI. They don't have a lot of quality wins, but they didn't last year either. Right now they're 0-3 against the top 50, so that sticks out. But last year I think they only had a couple of wins against the top 50. I think they might have had 2, and they got in with an RPI in the 50s. So I think if they win the Big East, and they didn't even win the Big East regular season last year. I mean, they got a lot of things going for them last year that really it's kind of in retrospect it's pretty surprising that they got in, especially over LSU. But
no
we want to open that can of worms again.
No doubt.
The point is if they win the Big East regular season, I think they could still get in with an RPI in the 50s if they don't win the automatic bid. It's possible, but you know they're going to need to finish strong. This weekend is huge. I think if St. John's wins this weekend series against Louisville, all of a sudden they've got a real chance, and the Big East could send 2 teams to regionals. And I suppose if somebody else won the tournament, you could envision 3 teams getting in, but that seems a little like a stretch to me. So this St. John's team was a team we liked coming into the year. You know, we had them just outside the top 25 in the preseason, if I'm not mistaken, John. They
were
in the discussion. And, it's taken a little while for them to get going, but they've really been good in conference play. And all of a sudden, they got 31 wins, and it's coming together for them. I mean, they've got some power arms. We've talked, of before about Kyle Hansen and Matt Caricitti and, you know, the veterans in the lineup, Jeremy Baltz, of course, and Matt Wessinger. I mean, good players, veteran guys. I think they're dangerous. I think they're pretty good.
It's kind of amazing when you just brush past what the SEC, the Big East teams have actually done. There's some ugly defensive numbers in this league. I mean, St. John's doesn't seem like it's an overly athletic or great defensive team. UConn, which was very athletic last year, has been pretty poor defensively this year. Excuse me. Is that kind of the – between the power arms and the defense slash athleticism, is that kind of the separating factor for Louisville?
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, you talk about St. John's defense. I think the biggest question mark in the year for St. John's, and one of the reasons we didn't rank them in the preseason, was they didn't know who was going to be their shortstop. And they, you know, they had tough shoes to fill. They had to replace their first-round shortstop in Joe Panic. And
right.
He wound up having to move Matt Wessinger over there, and he's got 17 errors. You know, he's more of a second baseman. He's not really a shortstop. So that's a bit of an Achilles heel for them. I agree with you. I do think that's why Louisville stands out a little bit, is the athleticism, the depth on the mound. I mean, I still really like that Louisville pitching staff, all those arms that they've got. They are fielding better than these other teams. I mean, 965 doesn't blow you away, but it's better than 959, like I think St. John's is fielding. So, you know, it's I think Louisville is the best team in this conference, but this weekend will determine a lot, I think.
Yeah, it feels like Louisville's offense has even got a little bit more ways to beat you. Is Adam Engel, my Louisville personal cheese ball, is he healthy? Is he back in that lineup, or is he still out? I think he's still out.
Actually, I'm not sure about that.
I think he's still out, but that was that's one of the reasons. Yeah, he is still out. That's one of the reasons why we love doing our summer college top tens. It kind of gives you an eye into the next college season, and Adam Engel really stood out to me last year at the Coastal Plain League All-Star Game. With his speed and being fast in the physical package, and he's only got 4 extra base hits, but Louisville's still kind of chugging along there without their, you know, this igniter who's 28 for 29 stealing bases. I mean, we talked a lot about Trey Turner, NC State, and his offensive efficiency, what he means to that team with his speed, but Adam Engel's kind of analogous at Louisville. So it's going to be definitely a series to watch, Louisville and St. John's coming up in the Big East. And then finally, Aaron, TCU back in the rankings this week at 24. The five-team Mountain West still kind of has this year or two where they still have this extra the automatic bid. Obviously, they need to add another team to this mix. But TCU splits their 6 games during the regular season with New Mexico. They win the series this weekend. TCU still, I guess, Aaron, is just never going to be the offensive club that we thought they'd be. But Jim Schlossnagel and that staff, Randy Mays, the assistant coach, they think that they've found things, they've found a way in Fort Worth to get that team on track.
They have. And like you said, I mean, it's not a, it hasn't so far been, I mean, hell, we ranked this team, I think I ranked it a 70 offense and 70 power in the preseason. Boy, that looks bad. But, you know, they are getting healthier. They are getting better offensively. They're just not going to be world beaters offensively, but and you know they've gotten really good pitching, but it's not last year's pitching staff or 2 years ago when they, you know, when they had an Omaha team. I mean, it's not Perk, Winkler, and Maxwell. You know, I think Andrew Mitchell is really good, and you know, Crichton and Tickle and these guys, and Preston Morrison and Finney. I mean, they got a pretty deep pitching staff actually, but it's not the shutdown guys. So. You know, I don't think this is a TCU team that's necessarily going to make a deep postseason run unless that offense can all of a sudden really get hot. I mean, what are they hitting, 250-something as a team? I mean, they just haven't gotten it done yet.
It's brutal because Grant Rivera, Aaron, was an offensive big factor the last couple of years. This guy's hitting 217 with 4 extra base hits this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one after another. I mean, Keaton Jones is in their everyday lineup. The guy's got a 197 slugging percentage. I mean,
don't hate on Laguna Beach guy, Johnny. Come on.
Are you kidding? He's a Laguna guy?
Keaton Jones was the star for the Laguna Beach High School team last year that won the first championship in their conference in a long time last year. But the fact that he's playing everyday shortstop for TCU, hitting 162, is probably not a great sign.
That's the first title in 48 years, Aaron, by the way.
There you go. Thank you.
There is that. They've got Kevin Crone in the lineup. Jansen Witte's back. Their offense is a little bit better. But, man, that's just a pretty underwhelming. That's like Oregon-like numbers when you're looking at their offense. I mean, it's just
– yeah.
It's NG, man. It's really NG. So we'll see what happens, TCU. They didn't inspire confidence for me, but back at the top 25, Aaron, there's just a real muddle. While there's not a team – I think we could wrap the podcast with this. Well, every team has flaws. The teams, I would say, through like number 19, 18, where USD is, the teams after that have more flaws, a lot more flaws than the first 16, 17 teams this year.
I still think you can go to 20. I mean, honestly, you know, this is kind of funny, but I mean, I still kind of believe in Arkansas's ability to make a late run. I still kind of think that Louisville could make a run with its pitching. Oregon State's pitching is exciting, and, you know, it's young, but it's come together. I mean, you talk about Jace Frey with a complete game this week against Stanford, and Dan Child and Ben Wetzler, three really good weekend rotation pieces. They've got nice arms in the bullpen. Those freshmen have beefed up the offense. I mean, I still think Oregon State is dangerous. So, you know, those teams, to me, I'll go all the way to 23 in our rankings, and there's a couple of teams outside the rankings I like. I think Ole Miss still could be a factor in the postseason. But the part of the reason that I think these teams could be factors is because I just don't think there's there's teams that really excite me that much higher in the rankings. I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't think there's a lot of really complete, flawless teams out there. I think I've come around on Florida State and Baylor. As pretty, you know, I mean, the teams at the top have earned their spot at the top. And Florida State, at this point, you have to believe in their pitching. That was the question mark, the lingering question mark with them. Even though they had performed, I was kind of reserving judgment. But you know what? Those guys just keep on doing it. You've got to give them the benefit of the doubt. But it's a fun year in college baseball because I think there are a lot of teams that could be factors. And it's going to be hard to pick your bracket this year.
I think I agree with you. The postseason has all kinds of upside potential. It could be very topsy-turvy. And in a couple weeks, I promise, we will give you a lot of Big West talk when Fullerton's getting ready to play Long Beach State. But until something interesting happens in that league, we keep not talking about that league in the podcast because there's just more interesting leagues. But great stuff, Aaron, as always. Where are you headed this weekend?
I don't know yet. I have to look at the schedule. It's this time of year, you know, we're all so deep in our draft bunkers that we'll have to pop my head out later in the week and take a look at the schedule.
That musty smell that you get when you download this podcast is me and Aaron coming out of the draft bunker to podcast. Anyway, thanks for your time, Aaron. And we want to remind everybody that this Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit atechsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more on atechsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.